Hussa was also in the company, but he avoided me and stood towards the other end of the line. That afternoon, we marched back and forth and practiced moving as one body, three ranks deep and with shields locked behind other shields and spears held high, as Grettir had taught us. Ethelric arrived mid-afternoon, with a small escort. He was older than I expected, a man in his mid-40s, with grey, balding hair, more weight around his middle than you would want, and a slightly nervous look about him, as if he was afraid he would get it all wrong. Not exactly the image of a great warrior prince, I muttered this to Cuthwin, as we stood in our ranks waiting for him to inspect us.
"That's the problem when your father lives a long time. A king should inherit when he's young and strong, that's what I think. But Ayla, though old, just keeps on going. He must be not far off 70 now."
"Even so, you'd think the prince would try to look a little more after himself. Wallace is getting on a bit too, but look at him." We did. Wallace was as old as Grettir, both of them older than Ethelric, but both looking muscular despite a predilection for ale, at least on Wallace's part. Wallace was telling the prince about how he had organised the company, and was pointing out veterans like Grettir and Cuthwin.
"Think about it," Cuthwin went on. "Ethelric was my age when Ayla led the armies to capture Ir Forwick. Since then, we have had no wars, and only a few raids or bandits to contend with. There is only so much hunting a man can do. Don't suppose he ploughs many fields, do you? After a while of sitting on your arse, it all goes flabby."
I giggled at that. Ethelric was likeable enough, though, in person. Cuthwin and I were called forward with Father to be introduced.
"Splendid-looking chaps you've got there, Lord Kenred," the prince said, eyeing us both. "Do a father proud. Strong and tall, like my own son," he said.
Father thanked him. The prince just stood there, nodding and smiling cheerfully, waiting for something else to happen. My father waggled his eyebrows at Wallace to get his attention.
"Maybe, Your Highness, you'd like to inspect the company," Wallace suggested, taking the hint.
What's that? Inspect? Yeah, that seems fair. That's what I'm here for. Check the army, make sure it's ready," he intoned, as if he was repeating orders from the king.
To be fair by him, he made a good job of this bit. He did not seem much of a leader, but he was friendly and cheerful, and would stop at a man and ask him where he came from, and soon they would be deep in conversation about planting beans, and what the apples would be like this year. I wondered if Cuthwin was wrong, and whether he did know how to plough a field. In fact, once I thought about it, the image of a cheerfully ruddy-faced farmer stuck in my head, a man who was born in the wrong place, and just trying to do his best. With him stopping and chatting to every third man, it took a good hour to inspect us, and my legs and arms were aching from standing and holding a spear for so long. Eventually, though, he returned to the front and looked expectantly at Wallace. Wallace had arranged for a small grandstand to be built in one of our fields, and he, Father and the Prince, along with his party and my family, took seats there. The company competed in tournaments for the next couple of hours. Cuthbert shocked everyone, apart from Edward and I, by winning the archery competition. There was no surprise, however, when Edward defeated all comers in the wrestling. The finale was a sword and shield grand melee. It was then that I discovered that the prize was to be the magnificent blade crafted by Grothir of Wixton, the very one I had long coveted. The blacksmith handed it to Prince Ethelric, who held it aloft so all could see. There was a barely audible sigh emerging from the company, as every man in its ranks absorbed it, wanted it, longed for it. Each man having the same thought, "Just win today, and it will be mine." We were paired up and fought with mock swords and wicker shields. The winner was to be the first to achieve a hit with the wooden blades on the torso of another. Cuthbert and I were paired first, and it was no surprise when, a few moments later, I landed him a nasty smack on his ribs. He went off glaring at me and rubbing his side. As each pair's fight was decided, the vanquished withdrew and new pairs were created. The bouts went on for over an hour, but, slowly, we were whittled down to a handful. I started to think that I might manage to reach the final pair, perhaps even to win. Glancing around, I saw that there were now only four pairs left. Cuthwin was fighting a lad from Little Compton who was about my age. The young boy was outclassed, and Cuthwin stepped to one side as he attacked, deflected the lad's sword, and then brought his blade back to deliver a blow to the poor fellow's stomach. I grimaced as I heard the air rush out of the lad, and then, with a groan, he collapsed to the ground. Cuthwin helped him back to his feet, smiled at him, added a quick, "Well done, good try," and looked for his next challenger. Meanwhile, I had taken on a huge blond-haired brute from a farm near Wixton. He was a terror to all the local lads when we were younger, relying on fear and intimidation to get his way. He roared at me, but when I stood my ground and did not flinch, he seemed to have exhausted his options, so, when I moved inside his blade and tapped him lightly upon the chest, he just looked at me, stupidly, and stomped off the field. Edward was still in the fight, but met his match in Grettir, who, despite his age, had a lifetime's experience. Edward was big and strong and relied on that to batter down a foe's defences, and then, when the enemy was staggering, would look to land the killer blow. Grettir just absorbed the blows on his shield, looking, frankly, a bit bored. Then, when Edward paused to catch his breath, he suddenly struck, thrusting the sword forward with a vicious stabbing motion that caught my friend by total surprise. Grettir nodded at him as he stomped off, and the look seemed to say, "Not bad, but you can do better." Husso was still in the melee, moving lightly back and forth, dodging this way and that. His opponent was a dull-looking man in his 20s who looked confused and bewildered. He tried to swing his sword down onto Husso's shoulder, but Husso was too quick, and was already past him, then clouted him on the back. It was now Husso's turn to square up against the old veteran, Grettir, in his semi-final match. It was a good contest, for Grettir was experienced and wise, and Husso young and agile. In the end, Grettir, tiring after 5 previous bouts, was flagging a little despite his stamina, and Husso used his agility to keep moving until Grettir made a tiny error and paid for it. Husso stepped to the side to wait for his final opponent, which was to be one of Cuthwin or me. Cuthwin and I had trained together many times over the last few months, so, although he was more experienced than I was, I knew most of his moves and was also slightly quicker. As a result, we were well matched, and exchanged thrust and counter-thrust, parry and swing, for a full 10 minutes, until we were both getting exhausted. In the end, I tried to finish the fight by rushing him. It was a mistake, and I felt my foot slip from under me as I fell. Ironically, that was what saved me, as I passed under his attack. Somehow, as my arms flailed around wildly, my sword managed to connect with his body. He just stood there, glared down at me, and then shook his head, not believing what had happened. "You lucky bastard," he groaned, then reached down to pull me to my feet, whilst all around us the audience howled with laughter. When I took my place for the final round, a rueful smile was on my face. So, that just left me and Husso. Just one more fight, I told myself. Just one more win, and the sword would be mine. I glanced over at my parents. Father was talking to Ethelric and pointing at me. He seemed to be avoiding looking at Husso, but then I caught him, glanced at him for a moment, and in his eyes I saw what? Guilt? Pain? I wasn't sure. Then I looked at my mother, and a chill shot down my spine. He was not looking at Cuthwin, or me, but straight at Husso, and it was a look of implacable hatred. Here, she seemed to be thinking, was living proof of her husband's infidelity. For years, she had managed to keep that distasteful memory remote from her life, but today, here was her husband's bastard son, Husso, in plain view of all. I turned back to Husso and saw that he had seen my mother's expression and returned it. Of course, he might resent me and our father, but it was this woman who, in his eyes, had ruined his life and destroyed his mother. His face took on a dangerous expression, and he now fixed me with an appraising stare as he swung his sword in a gentle arc and shifted the weight of his shield. Then, in a flash, he was on me. I might have expected fury, and as a result, recklessness. But there was none of that. His moves were calculated, driven by ice-cold anger, which focused his mind on the fight. As a result, every attack was threatening, and any one of them could have potentially won the bout. Forced onto the defence, I just blocked and parried each attack as I watched him and waited for my chance. He lunged at me, and I caught the blade with my shield, then followed up with a swing from the side. He danced out of the way, and my momentum took me past him. I could feel my heart pounding in my chest as I turned to face him, just in time to see the thrust towards my neck. I flinched back, staggered away from him, but I had to open my arms to balance myself, so he came on again, attacking the gap in my defences. This time, it was he who overstepped, and I slammed my shield into his side and sent him sprawling onto the glass, trapping his own shield under him. I was over him now, ready to finish the fight. In my moment of triumph, I looked away to see if Edith was watching. She was, and she smiled at me and gave a little wave, so I smiled back, feeling a surge of elation. Maybe Cuthwin was right, and today my luck was in. Then, disaster. I had wasted that moment of chance. I had done what Husser had done in the woods and looked to see who was watching me, and now I paid for my pride. Husser sprang to a crouch, and at last red-hot fury did show on his face as he thrust the wooden sword violently up into my belly, and I crumpled into a ball of agony and fell onto the grass. Husser howled out his triumph and pointed his sword towards my parents. Beneath him I rose to my feet and retched. Then I slammed my fists onto the ground in frustration, staggered to my feet and limped off the field, feeling my face burning. I was not really hurt, but I was angry, very angry, but not at Husser. I was fuming at myself for the mistake that I had made. If only I could go back a few moments, if only I had just finished the fight rather than wallowed in my glory. Then I would be the victor. Today, though, Husser had won. He swaggered up to the prince, who, oblivious of all the anger and hatred on this field, just beamed at him. "Well done, young man. What's your name?"
"Husser, sire."
"That was a good fight. You deserve this sword," he said, and then raised his voice. "I give this sword in honour to a great victory to Husser, son of... With a whisper, he added, "What's your father's name, boy?" My parents' faces went pale, and close by me I heard Cuthwin gasp. Husser looked over at my father and smiled a mirthless smile, and for a heartbeat I thought he would say what had happened 17 years before. But he just shrugged and then looked back at Ethelric.
"I have no father, sire," he said, his voice bitter. "He abandoned me and my mother when she was with child."
"Ah, well," Cuthric coughed, "I give this sword to Husser of Wixton. Well done." Husser bowed, then took the sword and held it up, so we could all see it. The Wixton boys cheered at this, and Wallace applauded too, although I saw him looking at my parents and biting his lip. But I said nothing, and neither did I applaud. I was staring at the sword. I wanted a sword so badly. I wanted that sword so badly, and now Husser had it. I felt like I could almost feel the gods laughing. That was the end of the tournament, and it was now time to eat. I wandered over to my friends, and Cuthbert patted me on the shoulder as a consolation.
"Bad luck. Come on, let's get some ale," Edward said, and I nodded.
Then I froze, because I had just seen a girl go over to Husser and examine his sword with him. Husser said something, and she laughed, and I felt hollow inside, because I had just realised that the girl was Edith. Husser pointed towards the barn, and Edith nodded her head, and they went in together. Cuthwin came over to me and pushed me after them.
"Come on, brother. Looks like you lost the sword and the girl tonight. Never mind, there's always ale."
The feast that night was spectacular. Mother had made sure the finest food and the best of our beer was served by Carefid, Gwen and Aidan. There was roast beef and lamb, fresh and warm bread, fruit preserved in jars through the winter, sweetened with honey, and our most delicious cheeses. The ale was outstanding, warming, bitter, and very strong. My mother revelled in the evening. This was her moment when she showed the world the wonders of her tables and made sure that tonight was a feast which no one would ever forget. She was dressed in a startling emerald green gown trimmed with gold thread. Father had bought it her once, and she had never worn it before, saving it, she always said, for a special day. This, at last, was the day. The coming of a royal prince, along with such a large gathering of warriors, was worthy of such a dress. But what really drew every man's eyes to her was a fabulous set of jewellery. It was a necklace, bangles, and headdress of priceless amber, mounted in a setting of exquisite silver. The set was given by King Ayla in recognition of my uncle's valour in battle against the Welsh of Eberarkham. In gratitude for his victory, the king gave it to the widow of the great hero. My uncle had died without children a few years ago, and the set then passed to my father, who gave it to my mother. Of all the men at the feast, only Cuthwin, father, and I had seen it before. 100 men and more sat, ate, drank, and as the cups were filled and refilled, they started to forget the clouds of gloom that lay over the future, and they laughed and sang. They laughed and sang, but I did not. I was on one end of the high table, and from there I could see Edith pouring Husser some more ale and laughing again at his jokes. Every so often, I would see him glance up at the table. He would look at me with a smug smile and then lean closer to Edith, or he would stare with spite and loathing at my mother and father, whose food and drink he now enjoyed. I once saw Mother glare back at him, but then look away. The gracious hostess could not deny him being there, the champion of today's games, and so, nor could I. So, I sat alone, sulking, and sipping my ale. Lila, of course, was present. Once enough ale had been drunk, men called for the harpist to come and sing, and to tell his tales, and Lila obliged. He told the tale of my uncle, and his battle against the Welsh, of Ayla, and the conquest of Eberarkham. Then, having seen the firelight reflected in Mother's amber jewellery, he told tales of the distant Baltic Sea, from where the jewels came, and wherein the sea serpents lived. He then told us that the tales must go on, and he was now waiting to sing songs about us, of our battles and our glories, so that, 1,000 years from now, men would still talk about us and remember what we had done. It's what the men wanted to hear, and they hammered on the table so hard that many jugs of ale fell over and Aidan had to bring more, so the men could go on drinking long into the night, and I, miserable because I had lost both the sword and the girl, joined in, until I remembered no more. The next morning I felt sick and my head was pounding when Edward kicked me awake. "Go away, you bastard," I yelled, but he just laughed. "Come on, Curdick, everyone else is up and ready for the hunt." The hunt. I'd forgotten that Etheric had given permission for the company to go boar hunting in the royal forests. They were west of the village and ran straight up to the river, which was the border with Elmet. Groaning, I dragged myself to my feet and was promptly sick. Edward watched me for a moment. "Better now?" he asked. I nodded. "Yes, actually." "Let's go then," Edward roared, and I groaned again, holding my throbbing head. Outside, the company was assembling, and I saw from the number of green faces that I was not the only one to have had too much ale last night. I searched the crowd for Husser, noticing with distress that he looked fresh and was now swaggering about, wearing his new sword. Ethelric and Wallace soon arrived, and we were off. It took us an hour to reach the woods we were to hunt in. Once there, we separated into small groups, each man taking a boar spear. This was shorter than war spears and designed to be much more mobile. A small cross piece just below the point is welded on to stop the beast carrying on towards you if you manage to skewer it. Wild boar hunting is dangerous. A fully grown adult can weigh much the same as a man. It is armed with fearsome tusks and is enormously strong and powerful. In short bursts, it can cover ground with breathtaking speed. There was a real danger of injury or death, so we hunted in pairs, each looking out for the other. The forest was dense, and Edward and I, hunting together, soon lost track of everyone else. We crept along, searching the undergrowth for movement, for what seemed like hours, but without success, and I had just turned round to tell Edward we should head back, when there was a snort from behind me. Spinning round, I saw a flash of red and brown mass for an instant, before something huge and hard thumped me in the abdomen. Still a little sore from the previous night's fight, and knocked me over stunned and with stars flashing in my eyes. Edward shouted something, and then I heard him charging towards us. The next few moments was all flashing steel, the roaring of the beast, grunts from my friend, and finally a squeal of pain, and then silence. My vision cleared, and when I could see again, I saw that the beast was dead, and Edward stood triumphantly over it. I dragged myself to my feet and staggered across to him. "Nice work," I said. "Yes, wasn't it?" he answered, never one to be shy of self-praise. We took the boar back to the glade, and soon afterwards other groups started to arrive. Ethelric drifted around us, stopping at each man or boy that had killed a boar, and congratulating them in his vague but enthusiastic way. and then stood looking a bit lost before Wallace suggested that he and Cuthwin escort him and his party back to Wixton. After he left, we prepared to carry the wild pigs home, strapped to long branches. Edward was still proudly showing Cuthbert the boar he had killed, when Wallace looked around the company and asked where Husser was. We all looked up and searched the faces around us. None of us knew where he was. Indeed, no one had seen him since soon after the company had split up some 6 hours before. No one, it seemed, had been his partner, as it now emerged that they had been bragging about his sword until everyone got a bit bored and he went off in a sulk.
"Oh, bother the lad. We'll have to go and find him," Wallace was saying.
Then there was a rustle of undergrowth nearby, and Husser emerged from the trees. He was looking pale. Blood was drying on his face, and he had lost his boar spear.
"Where the hell have you been?" Wallace demanded.
Husser collapsed onto the ground in front of him, then lay there panting for a moment before replying.
"Well, I went off on my own, didn't I, my lord? Thought I could kill a boar by myself."
"Did you?" Edward asked. Husser gave him a blank look.
"What do you think? I found one all right, but it charged me. I missed it with my spear, as suddenly it was on me, and I was knocked backwards, tripped on a tree, and landed halfway down a slope on me ass." "Damned idiot, you could have got killed. Don't be so foolish in future," Wallace said.
Husser nodded.
"No, lord, I won't."
Well, I must admit I felt better. Husser had been strutting around the night before, showing off with his sword, and the gods alone knew that he and Edith had got up to. Now, though, his reputation was tarnished. Fool that he was for getting knocked down by a boar, no one would mind that. Going off in a sulk, though, that's what folk objected to. We shuffled off towards home, tired, but on the whole happy. Many men had daring tales to tell, and after all, roast pork was on the menu. Soon we were laughing and joking, exaggerating our own glories while snorting in light-hearted derision at others' stories. When we reached the edges of the forest, we paused for a moment to rest and drink from a stream that ran there. Then the company would separate, us to go due east of the village, and the rest bearing northeast for Wixton and beyond. As we rested, Cuthbert confessed to us that he had cheated and taken his bow, but he had still managed to wound a pig and slow it so his partner could kill it. He laughed as he told us the tale. Then his grin faded, and his eyes widened as he stared over Grettir's shoulders, through the trees to the east. I turned to follow his gaze. Beyond the trees, I could see the dim red glow of fire, and the spring evening was heavy with dark black smoke. Yet there was nothing else in that direction for many miles apart from... I felt my heart sink with the grim realization that it could only be Curdham and the villa. Around me, the company had spotted it too, and were rising to their feet, alarm spreading. Edward and Cuthbert set off at once through the undergrowth, followed by several other boys from the village. Grettir screamed after them to stop, but it was no use. They had vanished to the east. Grettir seemed about to pursue them, when suddenly Husser pointed further to the north. More fire, more smoke.
"It's Wixton! Wixton is on fire!" he shouted,
sounding not just shocked, but almost affronted, as if it was a personal insult. A moment later, he set off that way, followed by most of the boys. Again, Grettir tried to stop them, but it was no use. The boys were now just worrying about their families and their homes, and blind panic had set in. I stared at Grettir, then the way my friends had run, then towards Wixton. Wixton was on fire. Curdham was on fire. What in Woden's name was going on? Chapter 5. Raid on the Villa. Grettir turned to me and shouted,
"Master, please follow the village lads, and I'll find you later. I'd better go with these town idiots and make sure they reach home safely."
Nodding, I turned and ran east in the wake of my friends.
"I'll find you at the villa, or here if Curdham is not safe,"
my instructor shouted after me as I crashed through the branches. I saw him head off northwards, running surprisingly quickly for a man of almost 50-odd summers, and then he was gone, invisible amongst the oak and beech trees. My friends had a few moments' lead, and were already out of sight through the trees, but I could still hear them up ahead, and I set off in pursuit. While I ran, the branches whipped at my face and then snagged and tore at my clothes. I almost tripped over a large log buried deep in the undergrowth, staggered a few more steps, managed to keep upright, and was off again. Ahead of me there was a sudden yelp of alarm.
followed by the sound of something heavy hitting water. I pushed a willow branch aside. Then it was I who cried out, as my feet seemed to sink into the ground and then slip away from under me. I just managed to hold on to the branch to stop myself falling, and then looked down to see that I was standing on the sandy bank of another stream that ran through the Royal Hunting Woods. I had slipped on the sand and would have ended up in the stream were it not for the branch. Edward, it seemed, had not been so lucky, and had ended up on his back in the water. Beyond him I could just see Cuthbert disappearing through the woods on the far side of the brook. He had obviously managed to react in time and leap over the stream. I could not see the other lads from the village, so I figured that they must have become separated in the woods. "Cuthbert, wait!" I shouted after him, but, whether he heard or not, he continued running. "Woden's arse!" I cursed. I looked down at Edward, who sat in the stream drenched through. I frowned at him, then reached down and gave him my hand and heaved him up. We crossed the stream and took to the chase again, with Edward lumbering along behind me. Soon the trees began to break up and become sparser, and the undergrowth vanished. I could now see the west end of the village and the orchard. Several of the villagers' huts were burning. One of them, I feared it was Edward's, was fully ablaze. Behind me, I heard my friend give a shout, and then a cry of despair, and we paused and stared in horror at the scene before us. Cuthbert was 100 yards ahead, approaching the fence around the village. Past him, I could now see figures silhouetted by the fire moving about, and I could hear screams of agony and shouts of panic. What puzzled me was that no one seemed to be trying to put out the fire. Why was no one getting water from the stream to the south, and how was it possible that the whole village could be on fire? We started off again. Suddenly, Cuthbert stopped running and dropped into a crouch. I caught up with him a few moments later, and he turned to me, signalling for silence, one finger moving to his lips. He then pointed the same trembling finger towards the village. I peered through the gloom, squinting to make out the details against the glare of fire. Along the main street of the village, there were shapes lying in the dirt. It took me a moment before the realization came to me that these lifeless lumps were the bodies of some of the village menfolk. A number were lying face down in a pool of their own blood, whilst others looked like rag dolls that some careless child had discarded and which had landed on a barrel here or a sack of flour there. The screams and sobs we had heard were for half a dozen women and as many children that were, even now, being rounded up by a mob of dark-haired warriors who each carried a spear and a shield, spears which now dripped with the blood of our own men.
"Who are they, Kerdic?" Cuthbert whispered.
"I'm not sure, but I guess they're Welsh from Elmet," I answered. "They must be a raiding party. It looks to me like they took the village by surprise." I glanced again at the bodies in the street, noticing now that some of them had spears and axes lying nearby, and I added, "Mind you, some at least of our men tried to fight." Suddenly I thought of my family and I knew that I must get to the villa. Edward joined us at that point, puffing a little, and stood and stared at the sight in front of him. Then, a moment later, he set off towards his hut. I had been right that it was his that was burning so heavily. If he reached the hut, we would be spotted. I had to stop him, and I launched myself forward, knocking him onto his front. He hit the ground hard, air whooshing out of his lungs.
"What in the name of Thuna's balls?" Edward hissed.
"Quiet, Edward. We must be quiet, or we'll get caught."
"Let me go. I'm going to kill the bastards," Edward threatened, as he struggled to get free from me.
I sat on him, struggling to hold him down whilst I tried to work out what to do. Edward, though, is the strongest man I know, and he was beginning to push me off when I noticed some activity in the village. "Stop it, Edward. Look over there."